This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com. Keep on lifting me higher,
higher, higher. I say your love. And welcome back, Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. Plowsy is our broadcast engineer. Brian is our executive producer. Chuck Marlowe, Frank Cusimano. And joining us on the guest line is the one and only Dr. Rick Lehman. Dr. Rick, how are you, sir?
I'm good, gentlemen. How are you guys?
Very good. All right, so here's my one personal question. My daughter, who needs a competition high because she doesn't play golf anymore competitively, she says, okay, I'm going to run a marathon. And she's training and training, and I'm telling her it's a worst idea. The human body is not designed to run 26.2 miles. So she's going off the computer on how to train for it. It's coming up in a month. She runs 19 miles on Saturday or 18 miles on Saturday. It's going to be her longest run in preparation. And then she wakes up Sunday morning and her foot's terrible. She's going to doctors up there. I bet it's a stress fracture. Dr. Rick, tell our audience it's not a good idea to run a 26.2 marathon.
So here's the deal. Most people can't run a 26.2 marathon or any marathon. There are 26.2 miles. And the people that run marathons, you know, run them, and I've said this before, because they can, just because it's very, very hard to do the training without breaking down. And what do you get? You get IT band syndrome, you get stress fractures, metatarsal stress fractures, which is the most common. You get tibial stress fractures, you get back problems. So it's very, very taxing. And the training, you know, basically what you do is you run 4 or 5 days a week, you have one long run a week. And you increase that long run and that long run. And it's a long run that gets you. You know, it's the going from 11 to 18, 19 that gets you. And it's very difficult. So, in general, I'm not a huge fan of training for marathons unless you're a runner. Now, if your whole life you've been a long-distance runner and you're used to banging out 8, 10 miles at a clip, you're doing that 2-3 times a week, then you can increase your miles.
Dr. Rick, in the previous segment, we had an important discussion about what animal is better as far as being a pet, dogs or cats. We all agreed dogs. Now, that's not necessarily my question for you, though. Dogs versus cats, is one of them healthier for living around them for your whole life? Like, will you live longer if you have a dog versus a cat or what?
So, you know, people have actually looked at this, and this is a weird answer because it's a companionship issue. And so people that have dogs generally find them much better companions than people that have cats. And as you get older, the companionship, mental awareness, non-Alzheimer's issue is an issue, and people actually do better as companions with dogs. Now, in terms of cats, you know, I guess if your cat's a great companion, you could make a case. But in general, the answer are dogs are better companions. You're probably going to be mentally healthier. You're probably going to be healthier.
Case closed.
Boom.
End of story. Way to go, Dr. Rick.
Ring the bell.
All right, back to wear and tear for just a moment.
Yes, sir.
Everybody wants to eat a lot, and some people want to drink a lot, so they have to work out. But wear and tear just blows away the body. So what do you recommend for women and men in terms of trying to stay fit but not tearing down tendons and ligaments and all that other stuff?
So, I mean, this is a pretty straightforward paradigm, and I think the biggest thing is recovery phase. So let's say you're going to go out and you're going to, you know, ride 100 miles on a bike, run 20 miles, whatever. The biggest issue is recovery time, and I don't think we give ourselves enough recovery time. So if you have a hard workout, you know, whether it's on a treadmill or whether it's in the gym, you have to rest that body part for a couple of days. So, you know, the paradigm is you do your uppers on Monday, and then you do your lowers, and then you do your chest and back. And then you may come, so you've got 2 days rest, and then you come back to doing your uppers. And that's really the way you have to do it. And if you're a runner, it's the same thing. You know, everybody wants to run every day, and nobody really wants to take those days off. So on the days off, you have to cross-train and give that body part a rest. So a perfect example is if you go run 10 miles, the next day you should swim or bike or cross-train in a way that you're not going to pound on your foot. You're not going to overload your IT band. You're not going to stress your tibia, and you know you're going to stress other things. And that, if you're riding a bike, you know that's going to be your hamstrings, your glutes. But you're giving yourself that recovery time, and that's the whole key.
Dr. Rick, speaking of recovery, what's your take on the Carlos Martinez news? shutting him down for 2 weeks to try to strengthen the area around his shoulder. He had all the issues with his shoulder and side last year. The scan says no structural damage, but it seems like it's his recovery in terms of being a starter and being able to have 4 days to bounce back versus a reliever that will kind of play into what his role will be. Do you have any insight into an injury like this, how recovery plays into whether he's, I guess, more likely to stay healthy as a starter versus a reliever?
I do have a little bit of insight, so I'm not going to go there. But I would tell you that this last month, the 6 weeks, has been somewhat concerning. And when they got to camp, it's concerning. But I think there's obviously been information up to this point. That's all I'm going to really say about that. But I do think at this point, you know, you have to wonder, can he recover as a starter? You know, can he throw 7 innings, wait 4 days, throw 7 innings, wait 4 days, 5 days, whatever? And the answer, I don't, at this point, is no. Now, the really million-dollar question is, are 2 or 3 weeks of rehab and whatever going to get him to a place where he's going to be a functional starter? And I think, you know, maybe for a couple of starts, but I think for a season, no. So your point is actually well taken. Would he be better off throwing a couple of innings and getting his recovery phase? But you're not going to be able to count on him like some relievers where you're pitching 2-3 nights out of 5. That's not going to happen.
So it would be still overall by October, it would be less wear and tear if Carlos Martinez is pitching a couple of innings every third day than getting 20 starts for the season.
No question about it. And that may be where he's going to end up.
Huh. All right. There's a lot of people out there listening that sometimes want to get a quick boost of energy and taste something that's not bad at all, and that's a Diet Coke or a Diet Pepsi. They think they're not gaining weight, and they think it's okay, but there are some health ramifications for having 2 Diet Pepsis a day. Elaborate.
Well, this was a little bit shocking, and I'm not going to lie, you know, because I'm not adverse to having a little bit of diet soda now and again. So this was basically a demographic study. So what they did is they took women, you know, I think 82,000 women, and they looked at what the chances are of them having a stroke or a heart attack in relationship to having 2 Diet Cokes a day. Now, 2 Diet Cokes a day, in my opinion, are not a lot of Diet Cokes. I mean, there's a lot of days that I've had 2 Diet Cokes, maybe not so recently, but for years. And basically, your chances of stroke goes way up, and your chances of heart attack goes way up. So your chances of having a stroke or a heart attack go from 5%, which they're looking at people from 50 to 80, so, you know, there's obviously a baseline, just to 30%. And so if you look at that, you know, 6 times the risk of having 2 Diet Cokes a day. Now, what they didn't say is why the Diet Cokes were giving you a stroke or a heart attack. This is strictly demographic. But if I'm a woman from 50 to 80 years old, because it wasn't found in men, the same paradigm wasn't found in men, I would quit drinking Diet Coke. And, you know, I'd drink seltzer water or something else. Gee, I don't know, something that tastes good that doesn't have, you know, different kinds of alternate sugars in it.
Dr. Rick, I have a quick question. What about sparkling water? My wife has started drinking that a lot. What are the health aspects of that? Good, bad?
I say it's great. The only issue with sparkling water, and I don't really think it's an issue, some people feel you're getting a little bit of a sodium load because there's more salt or more sodium in carbonated drinks and sparkling water. So unless, and women don't generally have this issue, so unless you've got a significant blood pressure issue, I think sparkling water is perfect, and I think it's the perfect alternative, and I don't see any negatives except if you have a history of high blood pressure.
All right, getting some questions about this. Is caffeinated Crystal Light okay for you as a caffeine source?
You know, it's got NutraSweet in it. So I would say, you know, having 1 a day, 2 a day is probably not too bad. I would try to limit it to 1 a day. And I think the problem with the diet soda is strictly the NutraSweet or like I said, the sugar substitute. Crystal Light has some sugar substitutes, so I would limit those to once a day.
Dr. Rick, this sounds like a sweeps piece on a local TV station to kind of, I don't want to say scare viewers, but get them to tune in. Should I be worried about deadly zombie deer disease?
Well, you know, this is a weird thing, and I'll tell you why. So I'm reading this article, and I would say once a week one of my patients you know, they're all hunters. They bring me deer sausage or they bring me whatever. And I've been eating this stuff now for 30 years. And I read this article that says, you know, sooner or later, it's mad cow disease. We're going to have something called Jacobs Creutzfeldt disease, which is a neurological disease that kills you. And they're saying it's going to become from contaminated meat, and it's going to be, you know, deer, elk, et cetera. So the answer to the question is, it does scare me a little bit, given the fact that, you know, I eat deer sausage kind of regularly, and my patients bring it, and I love it. And now all of a sudden I read this, but there's never been a case, but they guarantee there's going to be a case. So, you know, cook the meat well, and if you're eating venison, you know, just be careful that it's recently killed, and you hope that the thing wasn't sick.
A couple more texts. What about 5 rum and cokes at 41 years old?
Is that Martin?
For breakfast.
Is Martin texting in now?
I think that's a great breakfast. I would tell everyone, go for it.
I'm reading now that kids can start lifting weights before 13 years old. Is that true? What is the ideal age for young athletes to start lifting like Charlie Marlowe does at CBC in front of the kids once in a while?
So I think that young kids are better off climbing and doing proprioceptive exercises, running, monkey bars, etc. I think weightlifting is fine, and I've said this before, as long as the weights are low and the reps are very high, you're not going to injure the growth plates. The best years are probably, you know, the safest probably started about 13, 14 as the growth plates are closing. But again, I think if the weights are low and the reps are high, there's no benefit. Until you have a little bit of testosterone, you're not going to gain any muscle mass. So, yes, you can lift weights, but there's no gain. So you're better off doing proprioceptive things, running, hitting a baseball off a tee, hitting a golf ball, doing things that teach you a skill level and just lifting weights. Because, again, you're not going to build any muscle mass until you have testosterone.
Dr. Rick, this is a good one. This is from Injun Joe on the text line, 314. He says, Dr. Rick, whenever my ex-wife calls me, my blood pressure skyrockets. Is this normal?
See, now that has nothing to do with the sparkling water, the diet soda, or the deer meat. So that poor guy's in a mess.
Yeah.
All right. Final thought. We'll end how we began. Okay. If you don't want to run, you don't want to tear up the body and the tendons, and you don't have access to a pool, but you want to get some kind of cardiovascular workout, what is the best way to do it?
Well, the best thing to do is to walk fast. So you have no resources at all, right? You're in the middle of nowhere. You got a pair of decent shoes, and you go for a walk, and you walk. The problem with the running is the pound. It's the foot loading when you're trying to run, even if you run slow. But if you walk, you know, quote unquote speed walk, and you time your walk, so you say, I'm going to walk a mile, or I'm going to walk 2 miles. I'm going to try to do it in 8 minutes or 9 minutes, and now I'm going to try to do it in 8 minutes 50. So what you want to do is you want to walk fast as you can. But certainly an exercise, an elliptical, all those things are very beneficial. And you can go on the internet and you can get these mountain climber exercises, you know, free apps. It'll give you a 12 or a 14 minute workout that'll just kick your butt to death if you follow them. So there's lots of ways to get fit, but it's the distance and the time to run a marathon. It's a 4 or 5 hour ordeal, and you're pounding on the same poor metatarsals.
But walking can keep, like, weight off and good for cardiovascular?
Oh, I mean, speed walking is absolutely. Now, you look, you know, people are like, oh, you look a little weird. But you go try to walk a mile in 7 minutes and tell me how you feel when you're done.
Good stuff, Dr. Rick. We'll talk soon. Thank you, sir.
Huh. Take care.
Thanks.
All right.
Great info.
Yeah, he is the best. You could ask him about anything, and he'd give you, like, 2 or 3 minutes.
How about this on Carlos? This is what I was thinking.
All right.
Because, in my opinion, even before the injury yesterday, I don't think it was fair or smart to count on, let's say, Carlos Martinez for 30 starts. To me, I think you're getting a nice season out of Carlos if he either gives you, let's say, 28 starts, or if he gives you, let's say, 60 appearances out of the bullpen. And I was kind of trying to compare it to somebody, and I'm not saying he's going to be Josh Hader. But in terms of usage, if you look at how it might be smart to use Carlos Martinez, Josh Hader last year threw in 55 games. He threw 81 and a third innings. Mm. Carlos Martinez at the end of last year as basically the super reliever slash closer for 5 weeks for the Cardinals. He was really good. He made 15 appearances. and he was able to pitch on back-to-back days five different times. So he was able to recover at least at the end of last season. So I guess my point is, I think you can have as much impact as Carlos Martinez being a super reliever, pitching in 55 or 60 games in high-leverage situations. He can be your closer along with Jordan Hicks and Andrew Miller and kind of split that up. I think he can have as much impact in that role as being a guy who starts, let's say, 28 games.
Wow, that's
or darn close.
That's well done. And boy, if you got the production from Martinez like Hader, oh my goodness.
But I mean, do you disagree with that?
No, not at all.
I'm not saying he has to be Hader because he's obviously right-handed. It's a different story. But if you had a bullpen, because that's kind of what the Brewers did. Hader wasn't their closer, but he had a bunch of saves, and Corey Knebel was able to save games, and Jeremy Jeffers as well. Let's say Jordan Hicks is your main closer. Let's say that Andrew Miller is your closer sometimes in matchup situations with lefties. And then let's say Carlos Martinez is your super reliever who throws 55, 60 games, but also gets you, let's say, 12 saves because he's out there to throw two innings at the end of a game every once in a while.
I like it. Now, I thought I read somewhere in Derek's story or maybe some other story about how the Cardinals still think it's more from a health beneficial point of view for him not to be in the bullpen. But I guess if you were careful and limited the back-to-back appearances, you could probably find a way to work around.
I wonder how much of that is we think it's health beneficial or, hey, we're paying this guy to be a starter. We need him to be a starter.
I get both of those, but also look at last year. Now, Carlos has been an all-star before, but last year, in a small sample size, he was better as a reliever, and it was him as a starter getting injured three different times, three different injuries. We're talking shoulder, lat, and oblique. I mean, it was kind of just working his way up
the
arm
there.
Yeah. And another thing is, let's be real, we all love Carlos, but focus has always been an issue with him, and I think the Cardinals basically said this last year. If he's a reliever, he has to come to the park every day prepared to pitch. And that's a different mindset as opposed to if you're a starter, you're really focusing, of course, on that one day. But on the other 4 days, are you really getting after your recovery, your working out and all that? And I think with Carlos, it might suit him better that if every single day he has to prepare and know he might pitch that day.
Charlie, that is deep. You are more than just a handsome, shallow, news anchor. Right?
Yeah.
He's got like Bill James kind of. Yeah.
But the Cardinals have basically said that. It's not like I'm just bringing that out of nowhere.
I like it. All right, let's take a short time out. We'll have five questions when we come back. Also, we'll talk a little Blues too. We'll be right back.